This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at cvilletomorrow.org. On November 8, 2005, Albemarle County voters in three magisterial districts will be electing members to four-year terms on the Board of Supervisors. This recording is Brian Wheeler's interview of Thomas Jakubowski, candidate for the RIO seat on the Board of Supervisors. Mr. Jakubowski is running as an independent. His opponents for this seat are David Slutsky and Gary Grant. Tom, thank you for participating in this interview with Charlottesville Tomorrow. The complete audio and written transcript for this interview will be available on the Internet. Information from this interview, from some of the candidate forums, and from your campaign materials will be used in the compilation of Charlottesville Tomorrow's Nonpartisan Voter Guide. As you know, Charlottesville Tomorrow does not endorse any candidates, and our goal is to provide information to the public so they can make an informed vote on issues related to land use, transportation, and community design. Also, as you are aware, some of the questions you will be asked have been provided in advance, others have not. All candidates will be asked the same questions. Are you ready to start?
Yeah.
Question number one, please describe your past political experience.
Well, this is my third run for Albemarle County Supervisor. And I hope I've learned something from the other two runs. I am a past president of the Charlottesville Albemarle Restaurant Association. That's the only elected office I've ever had. But I am a kind of a student of politics. I took a course when I first came to Charlottesville back in 81. Course that the then Professor Sabato gave, and it was a course about political campaign advertising. And the thing I remember from the course vividly was the fact that he showed a TV commercial that Lyndon Johnson ran to counter Barry Goldwater. And what it was an atomic bomb exploding. And of course, it was very vivid and very effective. And it was meant to point out the fact that maybe Senator Goldwater was not the candidate you should vote for because he would have a loose grip on the cannon, so to speak. And as a matter of fact, Professor Sabato was very instrumental in having me decide to run in this campaign, because I met with him last January, and I told him that, you know, I was thinking about it, and I wasn't sure. And I said I certainly didn't want to run against an incumbent again, because that's kind of a tough situation. And Professor Sabato said, now don't be so sure that Mr. Bowerman is going to run again. And I says, and why is that? And he says, well, he's got a lot of splaining to do. So if I were you, I would go under the assumption that he's not going to run. And, of course, that's just what happened.
Question number two. What makes you better qualified than your opponents?
Been there, done that. And I'll tell you another reason why I'm running. In 1986, I suffered a cerebral hemorrhage. And I'm probably the luckiest guy in Charlottesville. And I had a vein and artery in my brain that were too close together, and they popped one day. And the great brain surgeon, Neil Cassell, went in there and got the plumbing right. And so I've been improving ever since. And during my rehab, I used to see a neurologist by the name of Dreyfus. And the first thing I would ask him every time I visited him was, Fritz, am I ever going to get back to 100%? And he said, physically you won't. But he said, mentally, and they've done neuropsych evaluations on me. They've done a number of them. And my mind did not get affected by the stroke. So I do little things to keep my mind sharp. I do the crossword puzzle every day, and I usually finish it. And there is an office at UVA. It's called the Office of the Institute for Aging. And what they do is they take people my age, senior citizens, 60 and up, and check on their dexterity, on their IQ, and on their on how they're getting along. Because, you know, as you age, you start losing certain things. And I took the test for the first time in 2004, and I took it again in August. And the second time I took it, I noticed something, and I said to the student who gave me the test, I said, you know, I think I did better on this test than I did last year. And she said, well, let me get Dr. I want to say Salthouse. Dr. Salthouse is director of the Institute on Aging. And he came in, and I told him what happened. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll check. We've got the test that you took in 2004. I'll take this test and match the figures with it. And he came back about 15 minutes later, and he said, you know, you're absolutely right. You improved in all categories except one. The one category I didn't improve in was the one where they would tell you a story and you have to tell them the story back, or as much as you remember of it. And I didn't do well in that because it was such a dumb story that I wasn't paying attention. And so I didn't do well in that. But I had an average of an 18% increase on everything else. And that included dexterity, that included IQ. And the doctor said to me, well, now this doesn't happen. He said, this is very unusual. What have you been doing to keep your mind sharp? And I said, well, I do the crossword puzzle every day. But, I said, the one thing that I've been doing that I really am not supposed to be able to do, I'm not supposed to be able to do multitask functions. I run the scoreboard at the UVA baseball games. And for somebody who's had a stroke, it would be almost impossible. And yet, I haven't made a mistake on the scoreboard since May. And so I think that really has helped me in my rehab. And I don't know if that answered the question, but that'll give you a little insight.
Question number 3. What do you think is the best water supply source to meet our community's needs for growth and for drought? And a follow-up, would you support a pipeline to the James River to address our water supply needs? Please explain why or why not.
Okay, well, that's a good question, and that's something that's been getting a lot of print. As you know, we have a new Water Authority Director, Tom Frederick. And I've got a copy of a publication called The Clarion. And in it, it tells us what he thinks the best solution is. And that is the one, I don't know what it's called, but it's the one where we take a 6-mile pipeline from I think Ragged Mountain. I don't know what it's called exactly, but I think you know what the one I'm talking about. It seems to be the answer to the problem. And interestingly enough, it was a problem that was first recommended by just an average citizen, and it's probably the one that they're going to go with because it's the one that makes the most sense. And as far as your second question, the James River pipeline is a pipe dream, and it'll never happen. It'll never work. And I certainly would not be in favor of that.
Question number four. The Board of Supervisors will approve ordinances to support recently adopted changes to the rural areas portion of the comprehensive plan. Do you support the rural areas portion of the comprehensive plan? And what new zoning ordinance strategies do you think stand the best chance to protect the rural areas for future generations?
Well, I attended a seminar the other day, and to my dismay, I found out that each year in the state of Virginia, 150,000 acres of rural farmland is lost each and every year, and we have to do something to stop that. So I think that the county is going in the right direction with their plan. And second part of your question was?
What new zoning ordinance strategies do you think stand the best chance to protect the rural areas?
Well, of course, we have conservation easements, and we have phasing, and we have cluster zoning. But I still think that the plan that Fairfax County worked at a few years ago is one that definitely deserves to be looked into. And that, in a nutshell, is where you ask citizens for donations of part of their property to be used for future parkland. And the one thing that you give them in return is you promise that you will name the park after them. It's something that worked out, was tremendously successful in Fairfax County, and I'd like to see us do something like that here in Albemarle.
Question number five. Consider the growth we see in Northern Virginia. What mistakes have local governments made there, and if you are elected, what will you do differently here?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, but I did come here from Northern Virginia. And I certainly wouldn't want to go back there. As a matter of fact, I came here from Chantilly. And one thing that the supervisors there are able to kind of postpone the tremendous sprawl that they've come across in Northern Virginia. For the longest while, there was no water to support the development that developers wanted to build. And so that worked for 4 or 5 years, and then they came up with I think it was the Chantilly Interceptor, and that made water abundant, and the developers just had a field day. They already had the land. If it wasn't sown properly, they had a super zoning attorney by the name of Hazel, who, if he walked into the room, the supervisors would cringe, and they were so afraid of him that they just caved. And so we have to guard against that. And like I said, I'm not sure exactly what the answer is, but I know what the problem is.
Question number six. Goals of the neighborhood model form of development, a form intended for the county's population centers, include interconnected neighborhoods and more compact, walkable communities with a mix of housing types that allow a larger population to live, work, and shop in a smaller area. Do you support these goals of the neighborhood model for new development?
Yes, and I'm really amazed that that my opponents don't, because I think of all the things that we've come across in the last couple of weeks, to me that's the one that's mostly a no-brainer, and I can't believe that any responsible candidate would be against it.
Question number 7. One example of a significant neighborhood model project is Old Trail Village. Do you think Old Trail will be quality growth for Crozet and Charlottesville Albemarle? And a follow-up, will it provide affordable living choices for our citizens, and how will they remain affordable?
Well, of course, the jury will be out on that for a long time. It's not something that I would have voted for, mainly because of the rural atmosphere that you had in Crozet. And when I said use the word had, that is exactly right. It's had because it's not there anymore. And I think that's a shame. And if I lived in Crozet, I would be kind of upset right now.
They are turning
Crozet into a Loudoun County. And they don't have to. Let me say one more thing about that. Our present Board of Supervisors voted a number of years ago on a railroad crossing railroad overpass that was paved with cobblestones. And everybody knows that the city of Crozet or the town of Crozet is really kind of a historic town. And they wouldn't come up with the money to do what they had to do to preserve the cobblestones. And I think that's a shame. If they can come up with money to buy fireworks on the 4th of July, they certainly should be able to maintain our historic values.
Question number 8. Our designated growth areas tell developers where we want them to build. Should we also tell developers through zoning what form we want that development to take? Why or why not?
Well, I think you should try, but if they get one of these super zoning attorneys, it probably won't work. But yeah, we definitely should try.
Question number 9. What types of incentives should exist for developers to build in our population centers or designated growth areas? And a follow-up, can you name some specific regulatory or financial examples? And should the development here be required to conform with the neighborhood model?
Oh, definitely. And as far as examples is concerned, Four Seasons is a good example. The county has just had to go in there and spend thousands and thousands of dollars to retrofit Four Seasons with sidewalks. Now, if the developer should have had to put sidewalks in when he made the development, and it would have been cheaper, and it would have saved the county a lot of money.
Question number 10. Do you support construction of a western U.S. 29 bypass around Charlottesville on the currently proposed route or some other route? Please explain why or why not and where another route might go.
Well, yeah, I definitely think we need a western bypass, but unfortunately I think we're about 20 years too late. We just won't be able to afford to build it now. 20 years ago we could have. And as I've said time and time again, when I went to a Places 29 meeting, and the meeting broke up into little groups of 5 or 6 people, and every table had a map on it. And when you see a map that shows you the area from Madison to North Garden, and you just take one look at it and you say to yourself, well, that obviously is not a local problem. It's a regional problem or even a state problem. And, you know, we've got a state senator who used to live in Earlysville. I don't think anybody really has played that card. And I know George Allen personally, and I know that he would do everything he could to help our area. And I'm not sure anybody's even asked him.
Question number 11. Please describe any other transportation projects on the Route 29 North corridor that you would support to reduce congestion.
Okay, well, let's start with a real small one. Dominion Drive, which is a road that goes between Commonwealth Drive and 29 North. It borders on a bank on one side toward 29 North, and on the other side, the shopping center, Shoppers World. We recently have installed about a 25-foot road that goes from Dominion into the shopping center. And I work at Ragazzi's Restaurant. And living here, using Commonwealth Drive, I use that every day. And it saves me from having to go on 29 North twice, Coton coming. And so when you talk about connecting neighborhoods, this is the kind of thing that, the kind of benefit that you get from a connecting neighborhood. I support the Hillsdale Drive extension. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that I'm a senior citizen and that I'm an advocate for seniors. But and my opponents have also spent a lot of time telling us how many people they've talked to. Well, I actually talked to 5 different people when I was getting my petition signed. I was over there at the Food Lion, and they all lived in Branchlands. And so we were looking right on Hillsdale Drive, and I said to them, I bet you all are thrilled about the Hillsdale Drive extension. And you know what? One guy said to me, listen, if that road gets built just like all the other roads around here, by the time it gets built, I'll be dead and buried. So I don't care what they do. But, you know, let's be fair about this. Now, if you talk to the rest of the registered voters in the Rio District, which would be another 9,995, they would all overwhelmingly support it because it's going to alleviate traffic on 29. So it's a no-brainer. Now, as far as about the seniors is concerned, I, of course, would have empathy for people who have to walk in that area. But I think that it could be made user-friendly by having a sidewalk setback or maybe even a bridge to go across Hillsdale Drive to go from if you're going to the senior center.
Question number 12. What are your overall transportation priorities?
Alleviate traffic on Route 29 North. The bypass will do that. And you know what the bypass will do? The bypass will get the 18-wheelers off of 29. We had a debate in Earlsville, and in 2001, the big topic of discussion at the debate, at the Earlsville debate, was the fact that 18-wheelers were used in Earlsville Road as a go-through road, and they wanted to know what the supervisors were going to do about it. Well, obviously, Mr. Bowerman didn't do anything about it, but on the day of that debate, I did try to get in touch with Chief Miller, who was not available. You know, a lot of people don't know, but the chief had a heart attack. And I somehow can't help but feel a little bit guilty about that, because the first thing that went on my website was Operation Crash and how I didn't approve of their handling of street drag racing, and that since they since have stopped that position, and they don't harass the teenagers who drive Hondas anymore. And I like to think I had something to do with that. What was the last part of that question?
Overall transportation priorities.
Just to get the trucks in. Oh. So I didn't get in touch with Chief Miller that day, but I did get in touch with the policeman who was hired to sort of regulate the commercial vehicles, and he spends a lot of time on Earlysville Road. And the truckers know that if he's going to be there, that they'll go back to 29 and they'll get off of Earlysville Road. And so the problem, I think, in my opinion, has been solved to a very great degree.
Question number 13. What is your top priority for action by the Board of Supervisors if you are elected?
Two. Both involve money. Number one is to raise the amount of income a senior citizen couple can have to allow them to get real estate tax relief. In the city, it's $50,000 a year. If you earn $50,000 a year, you are still entitled to get tax relief on your real estate tax relief. In the county, it's only $30,000. Well, most people make $30,000 on Social Security, and they need the tax relief. So that's my first priority. The second priority, and I'm not sure I could do anything about it as a supervisor, and that would be to put some kind of cap on the real estate assessment increases. I know that some of the state candidates are talking about that. That's something I'd like to do. And I would like to sit down and negotiate with the city about revenue share, which is a $10 million deal right now. And they no longer have the leverage of annexation. And you talk about cooperation between the city and the county. You'll never get cooperation between the city and the county as long as the county residents feel like they're subsidizing their city neighbors.
Question number 14. What are the greatest challenges facing the Albemarle County Planning Commission, and what type of person will you nominate for a position on the commission?
Well, Brian, I think I told you I hadn't even thought about the second part of that question, and I will think about it, but I don't have an answer for you now. The first part, what type of person? What was the question?
What are the greatest challenges facing the Albemarle County Planning Commission?
Well, the greatest challenges are going to be to decide which development they're going to approve. And we're going to have to tighten our our requirements and try to limit development, you know, because we have to do something about sprawl. And the last final thing, if we can't limit that, then we're going to have to plan our land use very carefully. So that's going to be the final answer, you know, because there's only so much land available.
Question number 15. Do we have appropriate resources in county government to achieve the objectives in our comprehensive plan? And a follow-up, in what way, if any, do we need to make changes? And what impact will your recommendations have on staffing and the annual budget?
Read that again. I'm not sure I understand that.
Do we have appropriate resources in county government to achieve the objectives in our comprehensive plan? What changes would you make, and what impact would they have on staffing and the budget?
Well, the answer to the first question is yes. And as far as changes in staffing, that's a little bit premature because I don't exactly know exactly what the staff is now.
Question number 16. Have you received any endorsements yet that you would like to make the public aware of?
Actually, I'm not seeking any endorsements because one of the things I said when I filed was that I didn't want to have to owe anybody anything. So I feel like if I get an endorsement from the realtors, then I would have to, then I would owe them something. When in fact, the only thing I owe the realtors is the first thing I'm going to do when I get elected is I'm going to have to sign ordinance looked over, because they are the biggest violators of the sign ordinance, and we're going to put some teeth in that law. It's going to cost them money every time they put up an illegal sign. And so, to answer your question, I'm not looking for any endorsements. I want to get endorsed by my constituents.
Thomas, thank you very much for participating in this interview.
You're welcome.